translation. After this, Jagannath Mishra got a son of the name Vishvarupa, who was most powerful and highly qualified because he was an incarnation of Baladev. The previous verse is 71. By loud cries, he invited Krishna to appear, and thus repeated invitation, and this repeated invitation attracted Lord Krishna to descend. Before the birth of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, 8 daughters took birth, one after another, from the womb of Sachimata, the wife of Jagannath Mishra. But just after their birth, they all died. Jagannath Mishra was very unhappy at the death of his children, one after another. Therefore, desiring a son, he worshipped the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. After this, Jagannath Mishra got a son of the name Vishvarup, who was most powerful and highly qualified because he was an incarnation of Baladev. Purport. Vishvarup was the elder brother of Gaurahari, Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. When arrangements were being made for the marriage of Vishvarup, he took sannyas and left home. He took the sannyas name of Shankararanya. In 1431, Shakabda era, AD 1509, he disappeared in Pandarapur, in the district of Sholapur. As an incarnation of Sankarshan, he is both the ingredient and immediate cause of the creation of the material world. He is non-different from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, for the Amsa and Amsi, or the part and the whole, are not different. As an incarnation of Sankarshan, Vishvarup belongs to the quadruple manifestation of Chaturvyuha. In the Gaura Chandradaya, it is said that Vishvarupa, after his so-called demise, remained mixed within Sri Nityananda Prabhu. Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pastaya Padale Shamadhi Bhakti Vedanta Swamaniti Namani Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Prachani Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschachati Shatarani. Hare Krishna. So I'm very honored to be sitting here in front of you all this morning. I'll try to say something which relates to this verse. So a couple of things from the purport are there. One is some little information about Lord Vishvarup and in terms of his pastime and in terms of his tattva. So I'll touch briefly on both as best I can. So as we just heard, Vishvarup was born after Mishra had these daughters. He had 8 daughters, one after another, who died. That must have been most devastating for him. But finally, he had this brilliantly effulgent son, Vishvarup, so beautiful, and a great learned scholar. It's described in Chaitanya Bhagavat. Some information is given about the child. And from his very birth, how he was completely attached to Krishna, utterly disinterested in material life whatsoever, and very much attached to his younger brother when Lord Chaitanya was born. It's actually said that Lord Chaitanya, as a child, as you may know, he was extremely misbehaved, like Krishna. He would create trouble everywhere. And he didn't fear anyone. No one could correct him. And why not? Because he's the completely independent Supreme Lord. So he can do what he likes. So he did do what he liked, which often involved transgressing all kinds of normal behavior. But the one person that he always remained humble and submissive before was his elder brother, Vishvarup. Jaya Shri Radha Gokulananda. So Vishvarup had this relationship with him. Vishvarup was when he took birth, of course, in Bengal at that time, the situation was very fallen. The people were largely Durga worshippers, disinterested in Krishna consciousness, Vaishnavism. They would mock the Vaishnavs, you know, in for the most part, that it was a difficult atmosphere. They were very materialistic. Very rarely was the name of Krishna heard. So Vishwaroop, right from the beginning, he thought, I don't want to see their faces. You know, why should I stay in this society? But he used to find solace by spending time with Sri Advaita Acharya. He would go to Advaita, and they would discuss Krishna Katha together in Lord Advaita Acharya's house. And Advaita would be so mesmerized by the boy and by his katha that he would stop whatever he was doing. He would just, like his normal business, he was a householder, he would just drop everything and just sit there, and they would just spend hours and hours discussing Krishna consciousness. And it said that, as Vishwaroop explained the Vaishnav conclusions, Advaita would roar in delight. There was a lot of roaring in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. Lord Chaitanya would frequently roar as well. So, yeah, he would become so delighted by the, you know, the speaking of Sri Vishwaroop. So in that way, he managed to somehow, you know, tolerate the external atmosphere, because there was some Vaishnav Sangha. And in his own home, he was always to be found in the temple room, the Vishnu Griha. He would be absorbed in worship of the Lord. He wasn't interested in materialistic activities at all. So it so happened to pass that one day Jagannath Mishra and Sri Sachimata decided, we must get the boy married, because he had come of age, 16 perhaps, I'm not sure, 17, 18 maybe. So they began to discuss his wedding arrangements, and he was in the temple room, and he could hear this going on. He thought, what, marriage? This is not going to happen. There's no way I'm going to get entangled in material life. He was very intelligent, very elevated in spiritual consciousness. So he decided to take sannyas. So one night, he just left home, and he didn't tell anyone. And the parents woke up next morning, and the boy was gone. So sannyas means finished, your material life, everything finished. Like the walking dead man, it said. So it was as if Vishwaroop had died. You know, he'd gone. They knew he wouldn't come back. Jagannath Mishra knew, you know, that he was so detached from family life. And he said, I never knew, you know, how long this boy would stay with me. You know, he always sensed that this would happen. But when he left, they were struck with grief, the parents and everyone. Advaita, they were weeping incessantly. Lord Chaitanya collapsed unconscious when he heard that Vishwaroop had left with grief. And they were just crying out, Vishwaroop, Vishwaroop, thinking that they would never see him again. Indeed, they never did see him again. So it's described, you know, people were trying to console Mishra and, you know, compose yourself. Your son has taken sannyas. What could be more auspicious? If a person takes sannyas in the family, he delivers everyone. You know, this magnanimous personality will save all of you by this act of his. So why are you lamenting? Innumerable generations become eligible for liberation as a result of this. It's the perfection of education. And but Mishra could not be consoled, because obviously this is his mood of vipralamba, of separation. He's not an ordinary personality. He's Nanda Maharaj, and he's a great, he's always the Lord's father. Whenever the Lord appears, he comes as his father. So, you know, this is, but he exhibited this mood of separation, of grief. And then he finally consoled himself, and I just read this little section about how he did that. And as I was saying, I could never know for certain whether this son would stay with me or not. The Supreme Lord Krishna gave me this child, and he himself took him back. Whatever Lord Krishna desires must certainly occur. The infinitesimal living entities possess but insignificant power over life's phenomena. I therefore surrender my body, senses, and everything to you, Lord Krishna, the supreme, omnipotent Lord. You are my shelter. Exerting true wisdom and established in knowledge of the Absolute, Mishra Mahashoy gradually composed his disturbed mind. So he preached to his mind, you know, to try and understand the truth, that everything's going on by the will of the Lord. It's all his divine plan, and we're just tiny, insignificant parts of that, and whatever's happening, we have no control over it. What's the point in lamenting? What's the point in struggling against it? We should try to see the truth, that Krishna is in control, and everything he does is good. So in this way, he controlled his mind. So this is Avisharupa's pastime, but in very, very briefly. And it's actually said that whoever hears about Sri Vishwarupa's acceptance of sannyas is freed from the noose of karma and attains devotional service to Lord Krishna. So this is something worth hearing again and again. And it's also said then that actually, as stated in this verse, he is a direct expansion of Lord Nityananda, who is the original Sankarshan. So, and in the purport we've just read, it's stated that he is the cause and ingredient. Different things we're told about him here. He's both the ingredient and the immediate cause of the creation of this material world, and I'll try to explain that a little bit in a moment. So the ingredient obviously means that the world is composed of Vishwarupa, everything. The cosmos is his body, is the Lord's body. And the immediate cause, so he brings it into being. That's what I understand by that. He's non-different from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, for the Amsha and Amshi, or the part and whole, are not different. So Amshi means the source of all the incarnations, and the Amsha means the part. Vishwarupa is, and the Amsha and Amshi, the part in the expansion of the Lord, the Lord and his expansions are equal, non-different. That's what I understand this to be saying. And he belongs to the quadruple manifestation of Chaturvyuha. So the Chaturvyuha are the expansions of the Lord coming from Sri Baladev. And there are two quadruple expansions. I'll speak about that in a moment. So he's one of those as the Sankarshan. And when he departed, Prabhupada says his so-called demise. So actually the Lord, of course, does not die. He appears to sometimes leave a body, but he's eternal, and he's not like us. He doesn't take birth and die like ordinary persons. So he in fact mixed with Nityananda Prabhu, after the departure of Vishwarupa, I understand, included in himself Lord Vishwarupa. So I just want to speak a little bit about the cause and ingredient. So as I mentioned, Sankarshan Vishwarupa is Sankarshan. Krishna expands as Baladev. Baladev is Svamsa, an expansion. He is a Vilas Vigraha of the Lord. And there's two kinds. There's Prakash, which is the Lord's own personal form, which he sometimes manifests for different purpose in multiple appearances, such as dancing with the gopis at the Ras Lila. And there's Vilas Vigraha, which have differences in bodily features. So Lord Baladev, his features are slightly different to the Lord, but he isn't different from him in terms of his tattva. So Lord Balaram then expands as the first Chaturvyuha. So Chaturvyuha can be understood in different ways. Chatur, of course, means four. Vyuha, four directions, four-armed, quadruple forms, vyuha. So, of course, there are four of them. Vasudev, Sankarshan, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha. These are the Chatur Vyuha. The first four are guarding like the four directions. So this is one of the functions of the Chatur Vyuha. And the first expansions of them reside in Mathura and Dwarka. From them, 24 forms of Vishnu expand. The Lord has four arms. Another thing about Chaturvyuha means four arms. So conch, disc, like this lotus, and club in the four arms. So they are configured in different ways. All this is explained in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adilila and Madhyalila. You can find Lord Chaitanya's instructions to Sri Sanatan Goswami. It tells you about every single one of these different, where the different items held by the Lord are different, so that the 4 factorial comes to 24. Any mathematicians here? Sure, there must be some. So if you change it in different ways, it will come to 20. So they come from the first chapter of Vyuha. Now, one thing about them is, of course, I was saying, they are equal. This was explained by Lord Brahma. Dipachya eva hidasantanam abhyapetya Dipayate vivrita hetu samana dharma yas tadrik eva hicha vishnutaya vibhati govinda maripurusham tamaham bhajami. So samana dharma, they like candles. If we look at the examples given, we must have heard that example. You have one candle and you can light many other candles from the one. Each of them are equal in their illuminating power. But one of them is the original, another one is the second, another one is the third, the fourth, the fifth, and so it goes. That is the distinction. Otherwise, there's no distinction in terms of their potencies and powers. They're all the same. And actually, what does it mean, expansion? Because all of the Lord's forms are eternal. Are they not? Lord Vishnu is eternal. Krishna is eternal. All of the avatars are eternal. So how can there be expansions? This is really just explained in order to help us comprehend tattva. Tattva is for our benefit, so that we can understand, try to understand. We can't understand, but at least we should exercise our brain in that attempt to understand the absolute truth. And it's so difficult to understand that we can be fully absorbed in that to the exclusion of everything else. And if we accomplish that, then we're successful in the mission of life. So that's exactly what we should be trying to do. And here is a nice subject which challenges us to understand how the Lord expands. Expansion, so, and his various functions. So it's, for the Lord, it's a question of mood, of rasa. So we have his original form, Swayam Rupa, Krishna, Bhagavan. And that is God. God at his most intimate, God at his supreme, exhibiting his own personal nature. And it's most sweet, beautiful, delightful, kind, gentle. Krishna is all of these things. He's the most wonderful person one could hope to meet. This is Krishna. He's the Swayam Rupa. And he expands. So just like I am at home, or a man at home with his family. That's his real self. He lets his hair down, if he had any hair, which I don't. So I let my shikha down with my kids and my wife at home. When I go to work, I put on my suit and tie. And it's a different mood. And, you know, I may have different functions at different times, and I would exhibit a different mood. But my real self is sort of hidden, kept inside there, when I'm at work. I'm not exhibiting that. You go to work, usually hide your shika, you know. I don't do that. You don't wear your tilak, but I do that. You should wear tilak at work. It's just a little aside. It's perfectly okay these days. But yeah, so the Lord's like that. Prabhupada told a beautiful story about Gladstone. Some of you may have heard. He was the prime minister in the UK years ago. And he had this big, important meeting scheduled. And so the man came, perhaps he was the prime minister of another country, and he was waiting outside Gladstone's room. And he was waiting and waiting, and he, you know, was wondering what's going on. You know, he could hear some sounds inside, but he was looking at his watch. Well, we're late. You know, it's already half an hour late. What's going on? So he sort of peeked in, and there he saw Gladstone on the floor, like a horse, with his grandchild on his back. And he was just, he was crawling around the floor. So, you know, this was Gladstone letting his hair down, being his real self. That was his actual mood. He was a granddad, you know, and that gave him the most pleasure. It gave him more pleasure. He had this big meeting with head of state, but he wasn't so interested in that. He would rather play with his little grandchild there. So he even held up the meeting. So Prabhupada told that story just to illustrate, you know, the Lord's mood. So this is the expansion. The expansion means a little bit away from his original mood, and then a little bit more away, and then a little bit, you know, so he expands in like this, out into, ultimately, this material world, where he has no attachment at all in this material world. He's not interested. He says, I enter and I do not enter. He enters, but he doesn't, because he is detached in his entrance in the material world. He takes no interest in it. All his different parts from the spiritual world expand into the material world. But it's explained by Avishnav Chakravarti Thakur that they're unconscious. They're like, they're there. It's explained in the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam how the Lord... I'll come to that in a second. It's explained. I'll explain it now. It's explained how in the second canto, Lord Brahma and how he, at the beginning of the creation, Lord Brahma finds himself seated on a lotus. How does that work? At the end of every day of Brahma. Day of Brahma is 1,000 ages of. 1,000 Mahayugas. So at the end of 1,000 Mahayugas, Brahma lies down to sleep, and everything is dissolved, because without Brahma, nothing can be sustained. Brahma is the engineer of the universe. Isn't that he just does it and then sits back? He's constantly keeping everything going by his vast intelligence. So when he sleeps, everything dissolves, and it merges into the body of the Lord. And so he too merges, he too goes, and he sleeps. Or perhaps he sleeps on the lotus flower. There are different descriptions. But then he wakes up, and he comes out of the Lord. A lotus flower comes out, and there is Brahma seated on that. And he opens his eyes, and perhaps a bit like us sometimes in the morning. Where am I? Who am I? What's going on? You know, it's like trying to get his senses together. Then Shushupti, you wake up, then suddenly you're remembering, oh God, I've got all these things to do. I've got all these problems to sort out. So Brahma's he's like that. And then he's sitting there and he's not sure what's going on, and then he hears this sound, tapa, austerity. That's like us, so we're gonna let's go. Let's get into the grind of everyday life. Tapa. But his tapa was that he meditated for 1,000 celestial years. This is a long time. One day is 6 months, I think. So You can do the math yourself. Thousand of those celestial years. And then he had a vision at the end of that. And he saw the spiritual world. He actually saw Lord Narayan and Vaikuntha. And so it's described in the second canto, this spectacular vision of Lord Brahma's, how he saw Narayan surrounded by his principal associates, the 16, the 4, the 6, I forget the numbers. So what does that mean? These were his principal energies. It's actually said that Prakriti, Mahatattva, ego, they were all there. Hand, eye, nose, mouth, they were all there. But not, there wasn't like a big eye, a big nose, a big mouth surrounding Lord Narayan. These were four-armed forms of the Lord. Everyone in Vaikuntha has the same form as the Lord. Same beautiful, blackish, four-armed form. So these were his principal associates. Now, as I was saying previously, when the Lord comes, they come. So we are able to have senses. We are able to have mind. We're able to have intelligence, organs, because sense organs, because the Lord provides them for us. But they come only for that to facilitate the living entity's desire to enjoy separately from God. So obviously Krishna doesn't have a lot of attachment to that concept. He doesn't want us to enjoy separately from him. He wants us to enjoy with him. He wants us to be happy. And of course the net result of trying to enjoy separately from Krishna is we suffer intensely until we finally realize that and give up the plan and turn back to him. So this is how the expansions occur. Moving away from the Lord's intimate original mood and desire. So the technical details are the chatter of Yuha. From the first chatter of Yuha comes the second, another one. And these include Mahasankarshan. Mahasankarshan is the sum total of all the jivas, all the conditioned souls are within him. And from him expands Karnadakashayi Vishnu. So Karnadakashayi Vishnu is Mahavishnu. So Mahavishnu. So Prakriti expands as Pradhan. Pradhan and Prakriti are the same. So in a corner, Prabhupada sometimes, to help us understand, explains it like this. In a corner of the spiritual world, a cloud appears. And this is Pradhan, this is Prakriti. This is the beginning of the material creation. And within that, the first expansion of the Lord is Mahavishnu, Karnadakashayi Vishnu. So he lies down in the causal ocean. Causal ocean is spiritual ocean, not like the Atlantic Ocean of ordinary water, but somehow it's described as an ocean. Then out of his body, of course, come all of the universes. So, of course, nothing exists. So what's actually coming out? I've pondered on this already. It can't, the Mahatattva is not yet there. So as if little globules of potential universes are coming out, tiny and then expanding. And some devotees say, actually, this corresponds to the idea of the expanding universe that I think Drutakarma in his book is, to try and give some correspondence to what they believe. They have this theory that the universe is inflating. The scientists, that's basically their whole explanation of everything, excludes God, of course. There's no mention of that. But they say it's expanding. So he said it does expand because it comes out a little sort of point and then all these bubbles are there. So these are in the Pradhan, and then Karandakshai Vishnu, Garbhadakshai Vishnu expands as Karandakshai Vishnu. So this is the second Purush avatar. There are three. So Karandakshai Vishnu enters into each one of these little globules, which is a Brahmanda, which is a universe. And he lies down, and then again there's another ocean. This is the Garbhadak ocean, which is at the bottom of the universe. Bottom of this universe, there is the Garbhadak ocean, and there lies the Garbhadakshai Vishnu. And he again expands. The third Purusha avatar is Kiradakshai Vishnu, so named because he lies on the ocean of milk. Kira means milk, so Kiradakshai Vishnu. So these are the three Purusha avatars. But they're all the same person. Again, Amsha, Amshi, same. And the expansion, you know, is just to facilitate the material creation in this world. So the cosmos. So the Karandakshai Vishnu glances, it's described how in his glance we are there. The jivas, the tatastha shakti, the conditioned souls, we are injected by him into the universe along with our destiny, because we've been here for a very long time, too long. And so what happens is at the end of the end of Brahma's day, we've accumulated so much karma. We've got all these desires which we forget about. All these different things are there. But time's up. The universe now has to be dissolved. So we're sucked back in. And we remain dormant for another 1,000 Mahayugas. But our destiny is kept intact. All our desires are kept. The Lord, Kiradakshai Vishnu, the Super Soul, remembers them. So it comes out with us. And we enter into various forms. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokula Nanda Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Swami. And the modes of nature and time. The Lord enters as time, and that then the whole show puts to sea. When he comes in as time, everything starts like acting. And Lord Brahma does his thing. So Lord Brahma, it's also described how, so this is how the Lord is the cause. He's the cause and the ingredient. So he's the cause as the Mahasankarshan and as the Karandakshai Vishnu. He's the cause of the material world. And he's also the ingredient. So when Brahma comes back to his senses after he gets this vision of Vaikuntha, of Lord Narayan, is again imbued with knowledge. And he then he asks the Lord four questions, to which four answers are given. And those four answers are the four seed verses of the Bhagavatam in the second canto, ninth chapter, 34, 35, I think somewhere around there, 36. So the Lord describes it, and he asks, you know, how is it you assume a body although you're spiritual? You never have a material body, one of the questions. And know that as the universal elements enter into the cosmos and at the same time do not enter, I enter, at the same time do not enter. So there we go. You see how we're going to comprehend that. Actually, we can't comprehend it. It's a chincha. How the Lord is acting, inconceivable. And actually, even the universe itself, like Shukadeva Goswami, when he's describing it to Maharaj Parikit in the fifth canto, even if one was imbued with a life as long as that of Lord Brahma, he would not be able to describe the universe, the cosmos, this one universe. One universe. There are countless universes. Just this one, you know, right now there's a lot of debate and discussion among devotees. you know, is the earth flat or is it round? You know, is it, what's happening? Is the sun, you know, going around or are we going around? You know, so they're trying to understand the cosmos, how it's working and the planets and everything. So, but rest assured, you'll never be able to fully understand it. It's not possible. even Shukadeva Goswami said, I'll try to explain to the best of my ability to give you some an idea of the cosmos. So, so this is the one cosmos. So this is, and this is a spark of the Lord's splendor. Not one universe is a spark. The entire material creation, which comprises unlimited universes. And this is just the Lord, you know, casually creating just, oh, a part of himself, a kala, just a part of himself comes out to do that. So just imagine how great the Lord is. You know, that's what we can't make sense of the earth. One tiny planet, you know, we can't make sense of anything. If you look anywhere, if you look at one square foot of ground and see all the different things that are going on, all the different life forms that are there, and it's multifarious manifestations, and it's like, you know, this is God's creation. So how great he is. So coming back to Brahma. Brahma, seated on the lotus, looked around and saw, oh, I have to create. But there's nothing to create with. So what am I going to do? There was the body of the Lord. So the body of the Lord became like the Garbhadakshay Vishnu. Lord Garbhadakshay Vishnu is the super soul of this universe. And he's the Virat Rupa. The Virat Rupa expands into this world. Now, of course, Virat Rupa is said to be imaginary. So there is one aspect, and that is this world. So the imaginary form of the Virat Rupa comprises the planets, the Shushuma, all that kind of thing. That's described in second canto and in the fifth canto. That there are these the yogis who meditate on the subtle and gross forms of the universe. Some meditate on the Hiranyagarbha, and some meditate on the Virat Rupa, which is comprising all the planets, in order to help them, but this is just to help them to get a concept of the personal form of the Lord. Prabhupada writes in one purport, those who can't stand the idea of the personality of Godhead. Something, he uses words along those lines, are repelled by it, repulsed by it, I think he says, something like that. For them, the Virat Rupa is there, so they can meditate on that. And gradually, it will begin to sink in that God has a form, God is a person. But there is also the Virat Rupa, which is the Garbhadakshay Vishnu. The Lord displayed a form, the Vishwarupa, the Virat Rupa, to Arjuna, and later to Advaita Acharya. And sometimes he displays that form. So that is his form. But so that is the ingredient. So the cause, as the Mahasankarshan, as Lord Sankarshan, he expands, he creates, brings the universe into being. And then as Garbhadakshay Vishnu, he becomes the universe. So he's the ingredient. He's the cause and the ingredient. And all this is Lord Vishwarupa. Lord Vishwarupa is Mahasankarshan. So, running out of time, I just wanted to say one thing. So the question I would ask, you know, all this information is given in Shastra. So who cares? You know, I mean, who cares about all this? Why should I care? You know, I'm told all these things. What difference does it make to me, to my spiritual life? See, whenever we read Prabhupada's books, we should come up with this question. You know, we read sentences, and we just, you know, in a doze, in a daze, you know, and we go on to the next one. And is it sinking in? It'll sink in if we ask ourselves this question. Why do I need to know this? You know, obviously it's there for a reason. The Bhagavatam. This information is given. It's actually said about the Bhagavatam that it's the literary Brahma Samhitam, the literary incarnation of the Lord. And if we assimilate the Bhagavatam, by the time we reach the ninth canto, we should be self-realized, God-realized. We're ready for the tenth canto. We're not even supposed to touch the tenth canto until we get to that point of self-realization. In one part of the second canto, I made a note of it here somewhere. I think it's 2:12. There's a purport where Srila Prabhupada describes how that really, if one has not yet become freed from sex desire, he should stick to the first and second cantos. And he describes that, because sex desire means lusty desires. But it's more than that. He also explains in that purport how it unpacks into profit, adoration, and distinction. Desires for these things. Desires for name, fame, and adoration, which are deeply rooted in the heart and very difficult to get out, extirpate. Very difficult to become free of these. We want to be seen as a good devotee, as a big devotee, I'm all right, I'm doing okay. I mean, behind the scenes, it's like, how am I going to make it? Oh my God, I'm struggling. Come to the temple, yes. Put on a brave face. Actually, Prabhupada says that about the Kamis, you talk to them, how are you? Oh, I'm fine, thanks, everything's great. He says, everyone says that, but when you're alone, you cry, Actually, so it's sad, because everyone's like that. So what the point I'm making here is that the Bhagavatam should be having this effect, extirpating from the heart these desires, which are so deeply rooted. And especially the second canto has that power. First and second canto, they have that power. One of the questions Brahma asks is, how will I not become overcome by pride when I'm creating? Because Brahma, we may think we're doing great things, we're doing some big things, we're building a big temple, we're collecting so much money. Well, yeah, well done. But Lord Brahma, the entire universe, everything's there by his arrangement. All these intricate arrangements, which we can't even begin to fathom. In every little detail, Brahma is there. He's bringing it into being. He brings into being all these devatas, all these different administrative gods who are controlling everything. So he's doing big stuff, big work, big service. So he knows that when you do that, when you achieve, big things, accomplishments, you become proud. Oh, just see what I've done. How great I am, how intelligent, how capable. So that immediately happens, and especially people praise you. Wow, Prabhu, you've done that's really good. Immediately it's said that as soon as a person is put on an elevated position, he thinks, I'm worthy of this. Oh, yes, this person is very intelligent. He's understood. Yes, my true position. So this is a problem. So Brahma, he asked that question, how can I avoid this pitfall? So in response to that come the seed verses, and one of them is explaining how I'm everything. Actually, he does everything. Brahma explains later to Narad. I explained earlier, actually, in the seventh chapter, to Narad how the Lord does everything. I'm just, I'm like the hand, on the body. The hand, what credit can it take? I'm moving it. And it may act according to my will. So I was just listening to a class, actually, where Prabhupada said, we must be like that. We must become like the Lord's hand. Then everything we do is simply completely according to his will and his desire. And then you don't accrue any karma, because you're not responsible. Anyway, that's a nice little point. I just heard in a class yesterday, actually, Prabhupada speaking. 66 class, great classes. So Brahma, he saw that the Lord he's doing it, he's Mahasankarshan, he brings it into being, he becomes the universe, he provides me with the template. It's not coming out of Brahma's fertile brain. The Lord provides the template for everything. He is everything. All his various associates from Vaikuntha are coming down to become the various elements of the universe. So all these things Brahma knows. So this is how we too can become free of our false ego, of our pride, our desire to lord it over, our desire to be, you know, the big person. Is all born of this false conception that we're the doers and that we're independent of God, but we're not independent. And everything is under his control. So if we can get that vision, that this is Brahman realization, actually, for a devotee. Brahman is not like, oh, I see, it's all energy. Everything is actually, Brahman is actually Krishna. You know, it's Vedanti Tattvavidam, Tattvam Yajganam Advayam, Brahmeti, Paramameti, Bhagavaniti, Shabdite, the three aspects of the same truth. So to see Brahman means to see God everywhere, to see the all-pervasive nature. How can we see the all-pervasive nature of God? To see that his hand is in everything. So that then we don't see duality. The duality that we see now is I like this, I don't like that. This person is good, that person is bad, you know. I'll vote for this one. I won't vote for that one. It's all duality. It's all illusion. A complete bewilderment. We have to see God's hand in everything. And his all-good hand. And when we see that, the duality is gone. And the false ego is gone. And we realize that it's all under his control. I think I'm doing so many things. You know, karta hamiti manyate. This is ahankara vimudha ma, that the vimudha in ahankara, in false ego, we're like vimudha, we're complete fools, because we're not doing anything. The super soul has entered our heart. He reminds us, we can't even remember what our material desires were. We've got all these desires, so the super soul has to remind us of that and push us in that direction so that we can fulfill our desires. You know, by God's arrangement, we go up. By his arrangement, we go down, because he knows our desires. So we can't do anything. So when this dawns, first this Brahman, then Paramatma realize, begins to dawn, then the false ego will subside and will become humble and free of all these lusty desires, in which case we're ready to go to the third canto. Move on from... As Prabhupada says, the first and second cantos, and once we're free of those desires. So that's why we need to know this. And, you know, if it's not having that effect, then we're not understanding it. We're not assimilating it. You know, if we find that we're still, you know, plagued by so many desires, then the Bhagavatam we've not yet taken it into our hearts and assimilated it. So we need to do that. So first and second cantos are amazing. They're full of that power. And these wonderful descriptions, very deep and powerful, potent Shastra. So, anyway, that's the little side. I think I'll stop because it's 8:30, and hopefully I've described something about Lord Vishwarupa. Does anyone have any questions before I stop?